On this delightfully energetic episode of Baseball Barbacast, we will review the Juan Soto sweepstakes, boot up the super agent Scott Boras scoreboard, and catch up on all the news that we missed over the last couple of weeks while we were busy sleeping. Actually, we were covering the postseason. You get the point. Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world brave enough to say that you should want Juan Soto on your favorite baseball team. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. Look, he might be a bad defensive outfielder, but, you know, who cares, dude? Whatever.
I don't care. I don't know why people are going out of their way to explain why they don't. Like, I would not want to be the person publicly stating, like, not interested in this guy. That feels like not the situation you want to be in. Although it is still amazing that perhaps he is about to play for his fourth team, you know, before turning 27. That is a very strange reality. It is Friday. First of all, thank you to everyone who listened to our Wednesday episode and gave us some very kind feedback about the open to that show, as we are all still kind of in a bit of a haze after the
I'm chilling
earlier this week. No, Jake's chilling.
Yeah, I'm chilling, dude.
You're good.
I'm in my parents' basement. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see that. I got a bunch of board games behind me. I've just been down here in this basement playing Yahtzee against myself, and I gotta tell you, I'm getting a lot better at it.
That's good. We love to hear that. That's what the offseason is all about. You know, it's actually getting better every single day. But on this episode, we're going to look ahead. We are going to talk about Juan Soto a little more specifically, since we didn't have a ton of time to get to him on Wednesday. We're going to talk about his agent, Scott Boras, and really kind of rev up the Boras scoreboard that we introduced on Wednesday. We're going to catch up on some other news. And then finally, we have time to bring back the good, the bad, and the ugly. It is hard to make room for that during the postseason, but now that we can settle into offseason mode, GBU has returned, and I am very excited for this week's edition, as I always am. But Jake, let's begin with that Juan Soto fella, who, as far as we know right now, the only thing we know that he's up to are two things. One, we know that he's playing Call of Duty, because he is posting about it on his Instagram. So that's good. All right. So we know that a baseball player playing video games, huge news. The other news-ish is that Steve Cohen, the owner of the Mets, will reportedly be going to California to meet with him at some point next week. Neither of those pieces of information is particularly flabbergasting, but that is the only really substantial piece of progress in this news story that we have so far. But we do want to at least set the stage for what we expect we will be talking about involving Juan Soto in the coming months.
I would argue that Juan Soto playing Call of Duty is more surprising than Juan Soto meeting with Steve Cohen, the owner of the New York Mets. If Juan Soto made it through this winter without picking up the sticks and codding it up, I would be like, that's surprising. If Juan Soto made it through this winter without sitting down with the 78th or whatever richest person on the planet who owns a baseball team, I would be floored. I would be flabbergasted. Okay. And that is why him meeting with Cohen is both news, but it's like Jordan Schusterman, you know, looks up minor league baseball statistics. It's that type of
news. I have some up right now. I don't even need it for the podcast. There's some up on my second screen right now. So that's a great point. That's a really, really good point. You know, I think maybe we knew that Soto, you know, liked to hop on, get, you know, rack up some minutes in Nuketown every once in a while. But, you know, at the same time, you're totally correct in terms of the first thing we were expecting to happen, or at least one of the things we knew was going to be a part of this. Steve Cohen being involved is hardly a surprise. We know that last offseason, Steve Cohen, and we've seen him already since he became one of the Mets, he's involved, right? He's the one writing these massive checks. And so he likes to meet these guys. He had dinner. He had Yoshinobu Yamamoto over to his own house, I believe. Now, in this case, he's paying a visit to the Boras compound in Southern California. So I don't know what to make of that. Steve Cohen willing to get on a plane. I guess we know he also I think actually when he went to Japan, I should say. So he did do that too. I know he also has had people at his house as well. So Steve Cohen will go. We know he has no issue going to make these, paying these visits, but it does set up a second year in a row, as has been pointed out. After last offseason, we had the Mets and Yankees competing for Yoshinobu Yamamoto, only to see him sign with the Dodgers. Now we have these two New York teams competing over Juan Soto, only to see him sign with the Dodgers? Probably not.
And that's a good place to start to review the Soto sweepstakes. For the preview. Third offseason.
Preview. We can't review them yet. They are in front of us, as Aaron Boone would tell us. It's right in front of us.
It's right in front of us, actually. Here's the deal. It is understood within the industry, the overwhelming assumption is that Juan Soto will end up with either the Yankees or the Mets. If he does not end up with a team in New York, people would be very surprised. Now, look, could that end up happening? Sure. The Arizona Diamondbacks made the 2023 World Series. I got married. Upsets happen. But the expectation is he ends up in either navy pinstripes or royal blue pinstripes over in Queens. And I think it is worth unpacking slightly why Juan Soto is so sought after. We have had big free agents hit the market over the last couple of years. Shohei Ohtani last year got a fake $700 million. More on that in a second. 2 years ago, Aaron Judge. Soto is expected to break both of those records. Now, I think you and I would agree that Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge are better baseball players than Juan Soto right now. If I wanted one of them for a playoff run, maybe I'd pick Soto. But for the regular season,
I don't know. They're all in the conversation for who is the first player you want to take. But sure.
Ohtani also pitches, so I would easily take him. Yep. Aaron Judge put up the best offensive season we've seen since Barry Bonds. I would also take him. But reason that Juan Soto is going to get paid more than both of them is very simple, and it is his age. Because Juan Soto debuted as a 19-year-old in 2018, it means that he is hitting the open market having just turned 26. He will be age 26 for all of next season. When you are breaking the bank for a player, knowing that you will get not just his decline, that's still good, but his prime makes him even more valuable. And it is so extraordinarily rare for a player to reach the market at this age.
And that is what is so amazing when you think about the projections that we're getting for Juan Soto, is there's really only one comparison in recent memory, and that is Bryce Harper, who was also a Scott Boras client. And Bryce Harper...
I disagree.
Oh, all right. Do you have another example?
Manny Machado did not have the same track record of offensive production necessarily, but Machado did hit the open market that same year as Harper at the same age.
Yes, that is correct. However, I was going to mention him because the fact that both of those guys took as long as they did, because remember, at the start of that offseason, we assumed that both of them would be driving up to prices we'd never seen before. And while they both did get big contracts, it did not necessarily ended up being the bidding war that we expected. And the fact that Bryce Harper, I use him as the comparison because of the profile of hitter that we're talking about and what he had accomplished as a hitter. But it's true, Machado had accomplished plenty in his time in Baltimore at a very young age as well. So if you want to throw him in that mix too, those guys signed for, you know, a little over $300 million. And now we're talking about someone getting possibly more than $200 million more than that. Now, yes, you can say inflation. That's not that long ago. And so why is it that Soto is going to be in position to get that much more, would you say?
I think his skill set is more reliable than where those two were at. I think he is a more bankable offensive force. He is a better offensive player, or has produced more offensively than those two guys had to this point. Like, you could look at Harper in Philly and be like, oh, well, he has lived up and beyond the contract. But go look at those numbers before he turned 26 and hit the market, like Soto's is straight up better. Like that's
yes, that's the thing. Definitely more consistent, right? And I think it's the floor that we're talking about. It's basically the highest floor you can possibly have for a hitter, right? And that's when you bring it back to Judge and Ohtani. This is why Soto is, when we talk about bankable and safe, and why owners are going to feel so comfortable giving him as much money as they're going to do. Harper did reach those peaks, man. That 2015 was as good of a season as anything Absolutely. Soto has done, right? But, you know, it was a little bit more up and down. There were times when he wasn't one of the best hitters in the sport in the way that Soto has been the whole time.
Soto's 2023, to me, is the most important season on his resume because he looked discombobulated and unhappy and out of sync in San Diego for an underperforming team. And yet, when you look at the numbers, he had a 930 OPS, led the lead in walks, and was a 5.5 win player. And so when you're like, what is a Juan Soto down here look like, and it looks like that, that's what you pay for. That is what you pay for. He's never been hurt. Seriously, knock on wood, he plays every day. Like, this is what you break the bank for, and that is why the money is going to stretch easily over $500 million. And now I want to bring in Ohtani, because the Ohtani contract, the headline is $700 million over 10 years. But because of the wonky deferrals and the way that the money's paid out, that's not the present value of the contract. And the MLB values it, like the cap hit or the luxury tax hit, is $46 million a year. And that is kind of the number that within the industry is thought of as like, that's the record, right? The highest AAV, average annual value, is $46 million. Soto and his agent Scott Boras are going to try and surpass that. So in my mind, you can put the floor for his AAV at like 46.5, 47. Then you just multiply that number by 12 or 13, and like that's the floor of the contract. So let me do some quick maths. 12 times 46.5 is $558 million.
But I also think that, again, a lot of the ways that these contracts work is they are based on precedent. They are based on beating the previous number, especially when you're an agent like Boras. So that 46 number is also, that's absolutely makes sense in terms of something to strive for. But also because of his age, maybe you're searching for the longest contract ever, which is also in play, right? We've seen 13-year deals. Obviously, with Harper, we saw as an extension too with Tatis, I believe. Maybe it's a 14 or 15 year deal, right? And maybe the AAV is slightly lower, but that's how you get it to an even higher number. That's also going to be in play. But I agree that those are the numbers that we're kind of looking at in terms of as what they'll be shooting for. And then, I mean, there's going to be, maybe the floor is something around there, and then it's just going to be, all right, that's where we're at. Yankees and Mets, Dodgers, whoever, how high do you want to go? And then you go from there. Now, it's possible it gets to a point where once you reach that, it's just like then you eventually just go to Juan Soto and say, all right, where do you actually want to play? Because you're going to be getting the biggest contract ever no matter what. And maybe eventually that just becomes his decision and it isn't strictly highest bidder. But maybe it is a situation where one of the teams is so much farther ahead that's kind of where it ends up.
You make a great point right there. Because I do believe that Juan Soto will end up playing for the team that offers him the most money. But there is a scenario in play in which the two teams are offering him a similar amount of money, and he has to make a decision based upon the soft factors. And we don't know what he wants. He has said all of the right things this year about being a Yankee and clapping at the fans and waving to the We Want Soto chants. But maybe he really admires Francisco Lindor and wants to play with him. Like maybe he has heard great things about Carlos Mendoza. Maybe he's excited to see what the, you know, housing development construction next to Citi Field is going to look like in 12 years. Or we don't know. We know that he wants to win. And I think that the Yankees and the Mets over the length of the contract give him a similar window to do that. Yeah. I think that a lot of times for a free agent, if we were comparing Yankees and Mets, you'd be like, well, the Yankees give him a better chance to win. Right now, given the outlooks of these two franchises and the money that the Mets have at their disposal, what David Stearns, their president of baseball operations, has already accomplished and the pieces they have in place, I think it's a similar level right there.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say about that before we broaden this out to just like mention the other teams who we think are maybe potentially going to be involved is Juan Soto thinking, we know he wants to win, and I believe him when he says that. I do believe him that that's a priority. And I think it's a good point about the Yankees and Mets thinking about it long term. But are players really thinking about, okay, where am I going to be winning in 2030? I mean, maybe to some degree, yes, you want to trust that. And that's part of meeting with the owners, meeting with the front offices and like trusting the vision. I do believe that that's important. But ultimately, it's also like he wants to keep winning right now. And so Mets have a lot of work to do. Even if they sign Juan Soto, there's a roster that doesn't mean I don't expect them to be good next year. But, you know, that's another thing that is going to be part of the vision that they're going to have to sell is be like, yes, we're here. Here's your $600 million. And then we're also going to do X, Y, and Z, which, again, there's no reason to expect that they won't. Whereas the Yankees feel at least a little bit, but I don't know, they're both in similar spots, which, okay, then let's broaden this back out. Let's say the Dodgers are involved. You want to win? That's the place to go. As Ohtani just showed us, we know that that is the safest place in the league to go appear in the postseason. There is no other team that any of us would be picking. And I would be saying this even if they had lost in the first round this past postseason. That is the team. If you want to win, you want to go back to October, that's the team to pick. So maybe they will be involved. There's no reason to expect them not to try because they've tried on every good player ever in the last 10 years. And some of them they've gotten and some of them they haven't. But it seems like people are not expecting them to be a real threat.
I do think that they're in a category just below, not just below Mets and Yankees, but I think they are a little bit ahead of those other teams just because of the financial might they can wield and it won't restrict them from doing other business. They have a hole in a corner outfield spot if they let Teoscar walk. And so,
and apparently the other corner outfield spot too, if Mookie Betts is not playing right field anymore, which we can get to later.
And so I do think the Dodgers, at least in my mind, are above this other gaggle of teams, which we can get into now very quickly. The Phillies, I think, are interesting. Their owner spends a lot of money. They were bounced embarrassingly in the first round, having won only one playoff game. You could see a scenario where he's like, F it, I'm opening the piggy bank. Do I think it's going to happen? No. I do think we will have a report at some point in the next month that's like, Philly sniffing around on Juan Soto.
Yeah, I mean, we had some version of that already. But right now, if we're going on, you know, the early reporting from John Heyman and others that basically are saying, you know, 11 teams have checked in, the seven that have been named are Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, Blue Jays, Red Sox, Giants. Giants are in that we know are going to be trying on all these things. The Rays are the goofy one that, of course, came this last week. And then, in theory, four other ones, which I am going to safely assume the Nationals are one of them because there's no reason they wouldn't at least be giving Boris a call, as they often do. And then, you know, there's some other big market teams we can maybe discuss. But the seven teams that have been named, again, Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, Blue Jays, Red Sox, Giants, and then Rays.
Dodgers, we did. Blue Jays, they missed out on Ohtani in pretty embarrassing fashion. They want to at least get the I tried ribbon here. It's hard for me to see them committing to Soto at the number it's going to get to, considering where they're at in their competitive window with some of their better core players starting to reach free agency.
Yeah, this one.
And they're owned by a corporation who's not going to like do something stupid out of joy. Like, Soto doesn't bring the same level of eyeballs and advertising dollars that Ohtani would have, which was part of that calculation.
Yeah, that's true. However, if you're even considering this, just give Vlad whatever he wants. That's how I feel about that. It won't cost as much. Yeah. It'll cost a lot, and it should, but just keep the guy that's already there and happy. That's what I would do if I was the Blue Jays.
Red Sox. Sure. I mean, it would be
I think the Red Sox are going to, I don't expect them to sign Juan Soto, but I think I am a believer that they are going to start trying to actually do stuff this year. I think they've been shamed enough and do have enough money to at least put a much more, I think they're going to be closer to the Giants in the, they might fall short on their biggest goals, but they're still going to end up spending money. That is my opinion on Boston. And San Francisco, Giants, I think, will be the same thing again.
Yeah, the Giants, who are now led by Buster Posey, former legendary catcher over there, he's going to do whatever he can to get them to be competitive next season. Like, that is 100% on the docket for him.
Yeah.
And considering they have missed out on big fishes the last 2 years, they were a finalist for Judge and they really wanted Ohtani. I could see them getting up there for Soto, but they're not going to win.
Here's what I'm going to say about the Rays, and then we're going to move on. The obvious point that was like made very flippantly and kind of ridiculously by John Heyman about this is, oh, well, they don't even have a stadium right now. Yeah. Forget chasing free agents and the likelihood. And yes, okay, they offered Freddie Freeman a bunch of money, whatever. Like, there is no way that all of the majority of the energy this offseason is not being spent on figuring out like what is going to happen there with
and
their stadium.
The reason that matters. No, yeah. But the reason that matters here specifically is because, yes, okay, so the baseball operations department, in theory, is the one like signing the players, and other people are in charge of figuring out where you're going to play. But when we're talking about someone like Soto, where that is a high level ownership conversation, leadership conversation, it is energy out of those two buckets. There is absolutely no way that the Rays end up signing him. It is comical that they were included on this list. I understand it is completionist in that, yes, the Rays picked up the phone and called Scott Boras and said, how about Juan Soto? And Scott Boras probably said, how about Juan Soto? We'll let you know.
Right. But hey, maybe he is a big fan of the skateboarding Ray and he will be a Ray someday. Probably not. But other than that, yeah, I mean, I do think the Nats are going to be a team that is going to reemerge here, but we will see. Long way to go.
Who, you have a prediction?
Nets.
I have Yankees. I've decided.
Okay.
I go back and forth. So, you know, I might say Yankees or I might say Mets next week. I'm Yankees right now because of David Stearns, who is the president of baseball operations for the Mets. And I could see him getting to a point where he tells Steve Cohen, like, hey, if you, this amount of money that you've committed to Soto, give me 80% of that and I will go get better players that in the aggregate can be better, which is a silly way of looking at it and a convincing way of looking at it. And David Stearns clearly knows how to do that well.
Why would, again, this is why it's such a bizarre dynamic. Why is David Stearns going to the owner and saying, give me less money? Explain that.
Good point.
Okay. Let's take a break. And when we return, we're going to turn our focus to Juan Soto's agent and reintroduce the Boras scoreboard, which we will be tracking all winter long. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. I'm so excited to bring on our next guest, a guest that will be with us all winter long, the Scott Boras scoreboard. Scott Boras is one of the more delightful, fascinating characters in our game. He puts the super in super agent. He represents some of the biggest stars in the sport and is a character all his own. And I, because he commands so much of the market this winter, we want to make sure we keep track of his wins and his losses. We started this on the last episode and determined that Scott Boras right now is 0-1-1 heading in to the morning of Friday, November 8th, the Bellinger contract decision is a draw, and the Garrett Cole opt-out game of chicken is a big fat loss. Jordan Schusterman, what other moves, decisions, quotes would you like to throw up for the scoreboard?
So our view of how this scoreboard is going to work is it is very, I was going to say binary, although we are including draws. So I guess it is, you know, there are three options here. But the difference between a horrible Alex Bregman pun and a contract for Sean Manaea, you can't score more than 1 point or lose more than 1 point. It is a win, it is a loss, or it is a draw. Anything involving Scott Boras this winter, that is how we are going to assess it.
Jordan, if you go and you beat Liverpool on the road, that's 3 points. And if you beat Swansea at home, Also 3 points.
That's true. So the size of the win, we're not concerned about goal differential, contract different. No, it doesn't matter. Do we? Is the thing that happened or the thing that was said a win, a loss, or a draw? And for those unfamiliar, Scott Boras, when he talks about his clients, he likes to get a little goofy with it. He likes to bring out the dad jokes of all dad jokes. Many have wondered, is he writing these? Does he have an army of joke writers to prepare these lines about his top clients? But as you mentioned, and we're going to get to these specific lines in a second, he is, and not that this hasn't been the case in recent years, but he truly will be dominating the top of this market in a way that we have not seen, arguably since 2019, when he had Gerrit Cole, Steven Strasburg, and Anthony Rendon. But this year, he's got Juan Soto, Corbin Burnes, Alex Bregman, Blake Snell, Pete Alonso. And then it's like even more than that. I completely forgot he had Jurickson Profar, Kikuchi, Manaya, Nick Martinez, Austin Hedges, who he just got a deal for, Josh Bell, Conforto, Matthew Boyd, Max Scherzer. Hello, Max Scherzer is a Boras client. That's a big one. JD Martinez, Joey Gallo, and now Jose Iglesias.
So that's five of our top seven free agents on our top 50 list are represented by Scott Boras. Jordan, run me through some of the bits he did the other day.
So he spoke at the GM meetings in San Antonio, and he gave us some, again, what he does is he basically takes their clients' names and very delicately weaves them into a pun you could not have possibly foreseen. Here's what he said about Juan Soto. Quote, "The owners, the general managers, they are kind of called upon to be championship magicians. It's kind of what they're asked to do. It's hard to do, to put together that magic for the championship run. But behind every great magician, obviously, is the magic wand."
L.
All right. This is an L. We're putting this. He's now 0-2-1.
L. I actually have been reading about the history of magicians recently.
Yeah.
I read Harry Houdini's entire Wikipedia page this morning. And behind every great magician is not a magic wand.
Yeah. Or wand, either. You're saying that even the pun itself, that you're saying that the wand, which is what he's going for, is overrated. Yeah. I agree.
Houdini never had a wand, and he's the most famous magician. Yeah.
And honestly, too, like, I think we've been talking about Soto's free agency for years. You gotta come. I hope he's got more material for Soto for the winter meetings. I really hope he can do better than that. Here's another lazy one. This is on Corbin Burnes. Quote, "Essentially, he continues to be a Corbin copy of his previous seasons." This is another L for me because it's not kind of ascribing a quality. It's just saying that it's been the same thing, which we know is good. But who am I to say, you know what else has been a Corbin copy? Patrick Corbin, who has been the worst pitcher in the league 5 years in a row. So if I don't know who Corbin Burnes is, this is not telling me how special he is in the way that Magic Juan or some of these other ones that we're going to get to. So that's why I'm low on this one. But do you disagree?
I completely agree. Your Patrick Corbin point is outstanding. Boras on Alex Bregman. He's provided the Astros with that infusion of championship blood. Everything about him is AB positive.
Dub.
Win.
This is a dub. This is an absolute easy. Yeah, let's munch on that dub real quick. That's, I guess, Boras's first win.
Yep.
All right. All right. So that's a win for Boras there. Okay, this next one is absolutely unhinged. Here we go. Obviously, he represented Blake Snell last year, right? And it didn't go so great. So they asked him, hey, Scott, why is it going to be different for Blake Snell this year?
Great question.
Totally good question.
Honestly, would love not a joke.
I would love an actual response. Answer. I know. We are genuinely wondering. This is what Scott Boras had to say. Quote, "There's no doubt the Snelling salts created a lot of whiffs. And the market has definitely awakened." Whoa. This one is different. This one is so over the top. Like, I think Snelling salts has to be one of the more edgy references he's made in any of these puns. And I think this is a win for me too.
Absolutely. But the best one he unleashed was about Pete Alonso. And I quote, "We hear a lot about the bear market for power hitting first baseman. For Pete's sake, it's the polar opposite."
Ooh. Now this one has so many layers to it. Bear market, you know, bear, like empty bear, like polar bear. What is it? For Pete's sake. Oh, which is so great because it literally is for Pete's sake.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. This is a massive dub. This is another one that we have to give to him. So he came back. We were disappointed by Magic Wand, but that's a win. And now that brings
him to 3-3-1.
Yes. And then let's do Jose Iglesias. Apparently Jose Iglesias has hired Scott Boras for his latest round of free agency. And Scott Boras referred to him as, quote, "Truly, we have the first MLB two-way player," of course, referring to him as his pop star talents. This is lazy and disrespectful. So I'm giving this an L. For Boras. This is definitely an L.
It would not be an L if he represented either Ohtani, Bo Jackson, or Deion Sanders.
And this is why it's an extra L, because it has the tinge of saltiness that he doesn't represent Ohtani.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's absolutely an L for him. I wish Jose Iglesias the best, but that's also an L.
However, we're about to give him another L for losing a client. Adrian Morahone, a reliever for the Padres, announced that he is leaving Scott Boras. That is an L. So that brings him to 3-5-1. But shouldn't we give him a W for getting Jose Iglesias?
Oh, but yeah, see, that line counteracted it. If I only knew that Jose Iglesias now decided to get Scott Boras, I would give him a W.
But don't give him a W and an L? Do we just give him a draw?
No. Oh, you know what? Yeah. Yes. Okay, never mind. I hate the line, but he did add a client and make up for the fact that he lost Morahone. Morahone coming off a great season, but Morahone's looking at this situation, not that he's a free agent, but he's looking at the situation. He's like, why is he going to pay attention to me anymore? Which is a fair concern.
And then we have one more.
Yeah, the one more we have to add to the scoreboard is the fact that he has got another contract for Austin Hedges. Catcher has returned to the Guardians on a 1-year, $4 million deal. And it's a W. Listen, you don't know, I was around the Guardians for the last 3 months. I understand the importance of Austin Hedges and recognize his value. However, as a player who is objectively one of the worst hitters in baseball history, I love that he is still that Scott Boras is like, yes, you will be paying you, the Guardians, who will not be spending a lot of money this winter, you will be spending some of it on him. And that is great. And I understand that Hedges has his value. I don't really know how much it is worth. I think it is not irrelevant that David Fry got Tommy John and is not going to be able to catch next year. So Austin Hedges, they extra need him to come back. But it's a Boras dub. And Austin Hedges has said that he wants to play like at least 6 or 7 more years. We're going to be talking about these Boras dubs for a long time if he can keep getting Austin Hedges' contract. So congrats to Hedgie and congrats to Boras. That is another dub for him.
So that on the day, pop up the scoreboard. That brings Scott Boras to 4-4-2 so far this winter. Today wins for Hedges' contract. Bregman bit, Snell bit, Pete bit. Losses for Soto bit, Burns bit, and literally losing a client in Adrian Morahone, and a draw for gaining Jose Iglesias, but unleashing a lazy two-way player bit. Stay tuned on the Baseball Barbercast to see if Scott Boras finishes the winter ahead on points.
Oh, we cannot wait. All right.
Can he qualify for the Champions League places?
Let us get to some other moves. We had the GM meetings this week. We were not there. We will be at the winter meetings in Dallas in December. A couple of, you know, this is the earliest GM meetings is like the most basic, uninteresting rumors about hot stove happenings. Oh, checked in on this. considering this trade. That stuff does not mean much to me right now. However, when you have all the GMs in one place, you're also asking about the roster, and we are gaining some information. And for two teams in particular, the Cardinals and the Dodgers, we did gain some real information about what their teams are going to look like, as well as some potential free agents' willingness to move to other positions. Jake, it says here on the sheet, our pod sheet, it says, Jake, do a bit. You wrote that, so you are telling yourself to do a bit. What do you? What are we doing here? What do you got for this bit of news?
Do you watch Inside the NBA ever? Do you know the bit they do called Who He Play For?
I do, of course.
Welcome to Where He Play Now. Welcome to Where He Play Now.
Okay, I love Where He Play Now because we're talking about the most famous players. I think Where He Play Now is a much better game for Dylan Moore.
Or, Where You Play Now.
Or Brandon Donovan.
Tommy Edman.
Right. Eli White. Where He Play Now. But in this case, I will let your bit live because it is very funny and it is relevant. So, where these guys play now. Jake, take it away.
Willy Adames Jordan, Where He Play Now. One of the bigger free agents on the market, reportedly willing to play now. Not shortstop, third base, second base, anything that opens the coffers.
Yeah. We kind of do this dance with most free agents where they say, oh, I'm good. I'll play anywhere. And then occasionally you get the one like, I ain't moving. Sorry. And sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't. This is an interesting one because we really have not. I mean, Willie has been, he has only been a shortstop since. I mean, there's been no changes at all, which, by the way, is different. Then Alex Bregman, another one reportedly willing to play some second, play shortstop, maybe? Who knows? But I was reminded that Alex Bregman did play shortstop in the major leagues, did play second base in the major leagues, played a couple innings in left field, no recollection of that earlier in his career. But Alex Bregman, which of these is more believable? How about that? I'll throw that to you.
The Adames one by a mile, and here's why. Two of the three richest teams, the Yankees and the Mets, have shortstops that they're not going to move in Lindor and Volpe. They're not, even for Willy Adames. If the Yankees signed Willy Adames, Willy Adames would probably play third. Same thing with the Mets. So Willy Adames saying, I'll play somewhere else. You then have the Yankees and Mets be like, oh, well, we could,
It's not that surprising based on Willy. Again, it is, I think it is that simple. Bregman is another interesting one to me because him being like, I'll play somewhere else is a little strange because he's so obviously the best third baseman available, unless Willy Adames is playing third base. So that dynamic between the two of them is also kind of interesting, but it's still a little bit early. Now, those are very speculative and might not end up being relevant. The next two pieces of Where He Play Now are more interesting.
Jordan Wilson Contreras, Cardinals catcher. Where He Play Now?
He play first base. Paul Goldschmidt will not be the first baseman for the Cardinals anymore. He is a free agent. And Wilson Contreras signed as a high-profile free agent by the Cardinals a few years ago. Very strange tenure with them where they were like, we don't trust you to catch. We do trust you to catch. We love you. We don't love you. He does have a no trade and doesn't want to leave. Toxic. When I saw this, I was like, this seems bad. But then you remember that Wilson Contreras rakes. And he has hit well enough to where you're like, all right, dude, you can be our first baseman. That's fine. We have Ivan Herrera. You know, we'd rather just move on and just focus on him as our catcher. And we are going to get the offense that we're looking for from first base from you there and at DH. And it's strange, but I think this makes some sense.
Certainly strange. Yeah. It is strange because of how we got here. They signed a guy to be their catcher. And then 2 months into his contract in 2023, moved him off of catcher, and then a week later, changed their mind. Now, there are 3 years left on this deal, and I would imagine that the best thing for the Cardinals is to get a guy who can really catch back there to develop maybe some of the younger arms that are coming up. If they don't think they're going to be as competitive this season, I understand that. Contreras is a limited catcher from a defensive standpoint. It's just odd, because why pay for this thing if you're not getting the full value out of it? That's like, if I bought a really expensive road bike, Jordan, and only rode it within Manhattan. I'm not. What's the point?
This is, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I don't totally disagree, but it is hard to say, like, did they sign him thinking we believe in this bat so much that we don't care if he catches, or is this just how it worked out? I think that's the other thing that I can't quite figure out. But that's the Cardinals. They are in a strange position right now. But the Dodgers, this is more compelling, I would say.
Mookie Betts, where he podcasts now.
I believe he's still podcasting at Bleacher Report. I could be wrong. He's, according to Brandon Gomes, likely moving back to the infield.
The GM of the Dodgers.
The GM of the Dodgers, yes. Was Andrew Friedman even at this thing, or is he still like on a bender celebrating his World Series? He's like, Brandon, you take it, buddy. I'm going to keep partying. I don't know what to make of this. Now, back to the infield. They did not say back to second base. They said back to the infield. I assume they are more comfortable with him moving back to second base than having him be the shortstop. But as we kind of mentioned on Wednesday, talking about the Dodgers, or last week when we talked about the Dodgers' next steps, what is their plan in the outfield, let alone the infield? Is Tommy Edman the center fielder? No, is Tommy Edman the shortstop? Are they signing Willy Adames? Like, there's a lot of ways that this Dodgers offseason can go, and this makes it even more interesting.
Process of elimination. There are six defensive positions in the infield. That's right, six. Mookie is not catching, and he's not pitching. Okay, so you can cross those off. Pitchers are infielders, too. First base, that's Freddie Freeman.
Yeah, we can cross that off. Base, for sure.
Because Freddie can't DH because they also have Shohei Ohtani. That leaves three options: third base, shortstop, second base. Third base is Max Muncy, and he kind of got better there defensively, so it's probably not third base. So it's either shortstop or second base. Shortstop would be interesting because we learned this past year that Mookie Betts, nice guy, great baseball player, not a great defensive shortstop, which again, that's not his fault. He doesn't do that. And so that leaves second base for me, which puts Gavin Lux in an interesting spot. Gavin Lux, who looked overmatched in October for certain points, was really good for them down the stretch before getting banged up into the postseason. Gavin Lux, former top prospect, who was supposed to start the year as the Dodgers shortstop, but got a little yippy with his throws, and then they switched him and Mookie. That's how Mookie even got the short. So does this saying, this is saying one of two things. Okay, we're trading Gavin Lux, or we're not starting Gavin Lux, and Mookie is our second baseman, and Tommy Edman is our shortstop, or Willy Adames is our shortstop, okay? Or we're moving Gavin Lux to shortstop, and Mookie's going to play second.
Do you think it's more likely that Lux is playing shortstop next year than Mookie? I don't. Because clearly, the whole reason we ended up here was they preferred Mookie at shortstop over Gavin Lux.
Maybe that is true in the long run, and I know Lux has had a lot of throwing issues, but Lux was coming off like complete leg reconstruction, and if you give him a full offseason and you say, hey, we need you to figure out shortstop, we're going to give you another chance, and then if it doesn't work out, you just move Edman back over there. So I think that could be part of the plan. I would think it's more likely Lux plays short than Mookie. Mookie just played it for a half a season and was just like not very good at it. It just doesn't seem like something that they would do.
I disagree with that. I think it definitely leaves Lux in a weird spot, but I think it's more likely he's traded than starting at shortstop on opening day. But again, it raises a lot of questions, not to mention like what the heck their plan is in the outfield. But that is our latest edition of Where He Play Now. Let's speed through some other news before we take a break and then come back and finish with Go Bad Ugly. Let me do the Angels quickly. I can do it on my own unless you have strong Ryan Nota thoughts. Actually, I know you have Scott Kingery thoughts. So at least you can prep those a little bit. We mentioned in the last episode that they traded for Jorge Soler. That was the first move of the offseason, acquiring Jorge Soler from the Braves, trading away Griffin Canning. They have also acquired Scott Kingery from the Phillies. Scott Kingery, who signed an extension before he became a big leaguer. That did not work out. Obviously, he has just been in AAA for the last couple seasons. They claimed Ryan Nota, who was a breakout player for the A's in 2023, was horrible this season. Even though the rest of the A's were hitting very well, Ryan Nota was horrible. And then they signed Kyle Hendricks. Kyle Hendricks, who I guess comes in and fills in the rotation spot just vacated by trading Griffin Canning, who has been a mainstay in the rotation the last few years. Kyle Hendricks, who threw a shocking number of innings for the Chicago Cubs in 2024 and is still throwing 85 and getting just enough outs, although not very many outs. This is the beginning of a very active offseason for the Angels. How much better are they actually going to get in their 10th attempt in a row of being competitive? I don't know, but the activity is compelling, I will say.
The Chicago Cubs, who employed Kyle Hendricks for a long time, tweeted a thank you Kyle Hendricks video. And Jordan, don't look it up because I'm going to give you a quick pop quiz here. The style of this tweet is for blank, for blank, for blank, for blank. Like the things that he did for the
team. This is what they're thanking him for.
Yes. Do you have any guesses?
I mean, I assume there's a World Series reference in there because he is the last guy left from that team.
For 2016 is the first line. Good.
Okay. For something about like his wisdom and leadership, right? That's what he's known for. It's kind of like a nebulous, like what he's bringing that's not, that you can't see in the numbers, anything like that.
And now that is why I find this tweet weird, because the next three are for years of dominance. I don't know if I would use dominance to just, even when he was like finishing in the top five of Cy Young's, like the best version of Kyle Hendricks, was he dominant?
Also, years, plural. Like, he did finish third in Cy Young in 2016. Like, no matter how he was doing it, you know, a 2-1-3 ERA and 190 innings, like, I'll grant that as dominant. Years, plural, feels a little nice.
But you can't put for years of competence in a tweet. The next two.
Yeah, you could. It would just probably not come off very well.
That's what the Nats should say about Patrick Corbin. For years of shy showing up. The next two are for your unwavering commitment
to,
I guess, being on the Cubs. Like, not leaving.
I mean, he was under contract. He wasn't going to. It's not like, okay, anyway, continue. And then what else?
He's and making the a last lot of money. One, maybe this last one is an inside joke I don't understand. Because the last one is for sweet emotion.
That must be like, again, if you're a Cubs fan listening to this, like, you idiots. Is that sweet? That's got to be like his, maybe his warm-up song? Let's see. Sweet emotion. Sweet. I think that's it. I think that's what it is.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know what that is. And everyone's like listening to us like, you idiots.
But so that's Kyle Hendricks.
I like unwavering commitment because like that unwavering commitment suggests like he was coming back every year and playing for the minimum.
Is that a shot?
Even though other teams are offering. By the way, I would say wait, it has wavered. He left and went to the Angels.
It did waver. Is that a shot at the time Yadier Molina bounced and went to go watch his Puerto Rican basketball team that he owned in the middle of the season?
Like Cardinals. We don't do that here on the North Side. Interesting question. Anyway, as for what he will do for the Angels, who's to say? But the Angels will remain active, and they will try to. They will also probably try to sign some of these good players. And I don't remember, they tried to sign Teoscar last year.
They tried.
And it didn't work, thankfully.
Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we will throw some news nuggets into turbo mode and do the good, the bad, and the ugly. And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbercast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. It is time for turbo mode. I would love, if possible, to get an animation of Jordan Schusterman in his CRV pressing the nitrous button.
I wish that existed, but I can very much say that is not present in my current vehicle.
All right.
But I wish. That would be nice. All right, go. Let's speed through it. Most of these are off-the-field things. Let's begin with the Brewers declining their $10 million team option on Devin Williams so that they can save like $1 million or $2 million. This is classic Brewers. They have obviously always operated this way. what is interesting here is, as he goes into his last year, them choosing to go to ARB when they already have this history of going to ARB with their best players and pissing them off, as they did with Corbin Burns, smells like they will do that, and then they will trade him because they can conjure up a reliever, a closer from other areas. And I do think another team is going to be very happy to employ Devin Williams in the near future.
Talking about which players are going to get traded this winter is a whole other conversation. This decision to not pick up the Devin Williams option and fight with him in arbitration feels like he shoots up towards the top of that list. A couple off the field hires. The Chicago White Sox, who were just one of the worst teams of all time, have a new manager, Will Venable, who was the assistant manager
associate in Texas.
Thank you. Sorry.
Assistant to the manager.
Assistant to the manager.
To the boat.
He is the new former big leaguer. He went to Princeton.
Yeah.
His brother was a free safety at Boise State.
Oh, I can't comment on that. But Will Venable has been, I don't know if that's true. I don't know if that helped him get hired by the White Sox. But the point is, Chris Getz has hired one of his peers from his, you know, playing days in terms of, you know, age and experience. And Will Venable had a very, are you correct?
His brother Winston Venable was a two-time All-Western Athletic Conference selection as a linebacker. So I'm an idiot and I'm...
Oh, man, that's tough. Will Venable, sneaky, like one of the best Padres of all time. Now, I know that sounds crazy, but if you look at like career games played, hits, steals, like he's way up there. He was on the Padres for a long time. And so, I mean, sure, the peak is probably a little bit of a dramatic thing to say, one of the greatest Padres of all time. But certainly he is one of the Padres, the most, talk about unwavering commitment. That guy was in San Diego for a while. He has been a now bench coach and on a couple coaching staffs. And now he takes on the brilliant challenge of turning one of the worst teams in baseball history into not that. How long will it take? Who's to say?
Is Will Venable the manager of the next good White Sox team? I'm going to say that's the plan. I think this is a good hire. This is a normal hire. And I think that's the most important thing. The great White point. Sox
yeah.
did something where other teams around the league were like, that makes sense.
And that doesn't matter if it's good, right? We don't actually know that. But normal hire, I think, is a win.
Because a team that is struggling to reach normalcy is the Miami Marlins. They still don't have a manager. It is Friday, November 8th. They went to the GM meetings. I actually think they still don't have a GM, technically.
Oh, is Bendix in Pobo mode? I don't even know.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So maybe they're still trying to hire a GM. Yeah, strange times in Miami. Related to that is the fact that Skip Schumacher was hired by the Rangers not to be a manager, but to be a special advisor to Chris Young. However, with Will Venable departing and with Bruce Bochy's time seemingly coming to an end, you could put two and two together. Maybe Skip Schumacher is managing the Rangers in 2026. It's not a guarantee, but I mean, that is kind of what it looks like.
Skip's kid. His son is a junior in high school committed to play baseball at TCU, which is in Fort Worth, which is near where the Rangers are. And I imagine that had a non-zero role in that. The Marlins, I want to hop back to. No one wants this job.
Yeah.
Not no one. Someone will take the job and do it because there are only 30 jobs. But qualified people have taken their names out of this hat to remain in their non-manager roles, which for the Marlins is embarrassing and indicative of their reputation around baseball right now. It is bad news.
Because I think on the surface, you might think we kind of debated, oh, what's the worst job? The Marlins or the team that just lost 120 games? And apparently the Marlins. So that's kind of all you need to say right there. Right. So we will wait and see. Maybe they do. There's reports that maybe by the time you're listening to this, we know who it is and we'll talk about it next week. And then the last hire before we get to Good, Bad, Ugly is that the Giants hired a GM under Buster Posey. It is Zach Manassian, the brother of Perry Manassian, which means we now have multiple Manassians as GMs. I don't know if there's precedent for this, but I do find that to be truly fascinating, even if he is not necessarily the point man because Buster Posey is calling the shots. This is kind of a fascinating dynamic. This is a family that has been in baseball for a long time. Their dad was the clubhouse, visiting clubhouse attendant in Texas for many years. And that is why they kind of grew up in the game. They were scouts. They were in the front office. And now Zach, who has kind of been on the scouting side of things, we know that Posey was going to prioritize kind of getting someone on the scouting, more old school side of things. And he now takes that GM job in San Francisco. But Posey is still calling the shots. And I will say, we are going to be talking a lot about Buster Posey this winter for a lot of reasons. And so while Zach is now technically the GM, the Pobo will remain the focus, I think, for us.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. Let's do it. I want an animation for this where it's me and you on like a Western movie set wearing cowboy crap. And it's like, this pot ain't big enough for the both of us.
Okay. Well, that's not like, kind of how I thought about Good, Bad, Ugly, but I'm into it.
It's like a tumbleweed of our heads.
This is actually, you know why? I'm actually, I am thinking about that because I just started playing Red Dead Redemption for the first time.
Yeah.
So you got me and John Marston. We're right there for you. All right. Let's begin again. Something good, something bad, something ugly, something strange, something unusual from the week that was, or just in the baseball world. Jake, why don't you start us off?
Here's what's good. Paul Skeens is going to be the celebrity picker on College Game Day this weekend. If those assortment of words mean nothing to you, Mom, College Game Day is the enormous pregame show for college football on the weekends on ESPN. And every week they have, they go somewhere else in the country and they have a famous person pick the games with them, and that famous person is related to the school that they're at. A couple weeks ago, they went to Bloomington, Indiana, and had Kyle Schwarber there to do the picking, which was great. And now we have Paul Skeens and Livy Dunn on set this weekend at LSU. That is good. The first step in trying to make baseball a bigger deal is acknowledging that it is not the biggest deal. College football is more important than us, and that's okay. And so anytime we get Paul Skeens on TV, he's going to talk really quietly because he's a sneaky, boring interview on camera, and his girlfriend is the opposite. Mm-hmm. It's going to be good. I'm going to watch it. A lot of other people will, too.
Here's my favorite thing about that whole bit. Who do you think they're going to pick?
That's the funniest thing. They pick other games.
Skeens rolls in, and he goes, Bama. No, I know they pick other games. That is good. I agree. Go, Paul Skeens, go. My good is a Q&A that Matt Gelb did at The Athletic with John Middleton of the Philadelphia Phillies. I don't know if you read this. This was earlier this week. And it's
everything Matt Gelb
writes. Okay, yes, I know. He had a Q&A with Phillies owner John Middleton. And I read this and I was like, damn, he's that guy. There's a lot of fascinating stuff in there, so I encourage people to read it. But the good that I am going to present is basically the last question, which Gelb asks. You're passionate about winning. Has it become any harder for you to separate the fan in you from the CEO? And he finishes this Q&A with basically this whole thing about how the fan has to drive the CEO. And I was just like, why don't we have this? Why are all the owners not like this? But this quote, being passionate about your product is, I think, the foundation of greatness in any industry. The fan in me has to drive the CEO in me, not the other way around. As soon as you start thinking like a CEO to the extent that you're detached from your product, detached from your fans, detached from your employees, you are lost. You should never be detached from any of those three things. They should be at the forefront. They're all priorities. You have to be passionate about them. That is a good owner right there. And you know, rest in peace, Peter Seidler, San Diego. We know he was absolutely like this as well. We like to think that there are other owners out there like this, but the degree to which John Middleton is like, hell yeah, I'm spending money. We ain't stopping that. We're bringing in new investors so that we can keep spending money. We are not accepting what just happened in the postseason is just so refreshing. And anytime I see an owner come out talking like this, I will say that is good.
I'm glad that John Middleton's pandering works on you. I like John Middleton, and it is exactly the kind of owner I want. I want to be pandered to. He gets it to an extent that is very unique at this current point in time. Let's move on to bad. And I'm going to talk about Freddie Freeman's appearance on Jimmy Kimmel.
Oh, bad. Oh, my gosh. All right. What was bad about this? I did watch this, so I'm curious.
You did watch this?
I did. I did, yeah.
So the funniest part is this was on election night. So,
was it? Yeah, yes. Right, but it was before. There was no...
They recorded it before.
Yes, yes.
So it's like, Trump wins Montana. And then it's like, Freddie Freeman is... go over... You know, it's just very disjointed. I'm going to read a couple back and forths here between Jimmy Kimmel and Freddie Freeman. Okay?
Yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel, were you annoyed when they walked Mookie? Freddie Freeman, I'm not annoyed. I mean, if you follow baseball, once you saw them get second and third after Show's foul out, I knew it was just the left-on-left matchup they wanted. Freddie Freeman straight up saying, if you follow baseball, Jimmy Kimmel. And that is why this is bad, because Jimmy Kimmel does not appear to be a ball knower. I like Jimmy Kimmel generally. Next, back and forth. Freddie Freeman, I wasn't really thinking about Mookie getting walked. I was just going over my plan in that moment. He's obviously referring to the walk-off grand slam. Not sure if you guys saw it.
Oh, I did. I saw Game it. Yeah, I saw a clip of that, yeah.
Jimmy Kimmel, so you had a plan going into that at-bat. Freddie Freeman, yes.
Classic talk show banter.
So you had a plan going into that at-bat. Yeah, I'm Freddie Freeman. Like, I have a
That's
plan.
That's the job.
There are players who sometimes don't have plans, clearly, right? But Freddie Freeman, not one of those guys. Last one. Freddie Freeman talking about his plan later in the interview. So you could be looking in certain spots, but sometimes you miss the mistakes you get. Jimmy Kimmel, yeah, I would miss every single time. Hilarious. Freddie Freeman, I'm glad I didn't miss in that moment. Jimmy Kimmel, have you spoken to Nestor? Did you have anything to say? Did you say thanks? No, what? Okay. Have that you was, spoken that part, to that part Nestor?
Was like, yeah. I was like, when's that going to happen? And why is that going to happen?
What would he say? Hey.
He calls Yankees PR. Yo, can you connect me to Nestor? I would like to say what?
Suck exactly? it.
Oh my God.
And anyway. Especially Freddie Freeman, right? Who is just like 80 grade mild mannered dude, like top of the charts, chiller. Totally. So funny. Have you spoken to Nestor? Jimmy, come on.
Why not? My good was a good owner. My bad is a bad owner. John Fisher. Jake, are you aware that your tweet was read in court this week?
Yeah.
This is also good and ugly, but I'm just going to use it as bad because I have a different ugly. John Fisher still owns the San Jose Earthquakes, an MLS team, and they are apparently trying to get public money from San Jose to build
Hilarious.
Some sort of facility. Anyway, they are debating whether they should be giving the money to John Fisher, which obviously everyone is screaming no, 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 no. And as part of some sort of court proceeding, a gentleman by the name of Joe Simidian, the Santa Clara County supervisor, seems like a very nice man. He basically was presenting his case for why they should not be just giving John Fisher more money. And in doing so, and this clip was tweeted by at Last Dive Bar, of course, a very prominent and important kind of account group celebrating Oakland A's fans and the Coliseum. He essentially spent 5 minutes reading excerpts from articles and interviews and stories and apparently your tweets, Jake Mintz, to explain why John Fisher is so terrible and so bad. This is why this is in bad. And Jake, who had a wonderful thread kind of talking about A's fans and how they got screwed, had one of his tweets. And after referencing, you know, some newspapers and Jeff Passan, Joe Simidian, this 71-year-old county supervisor is like, we have this from Cespedes Family Barbecue.
It's so he funny.
Reads your tweet. It is incredible. We will retweet it. You can see it from the Last Dive Bar. But the point is, this isn't bad because apparently John Fisher, despite vacating, trying to depart the Bay Area with the Oakland A's, is still trying to get public money shamelessly from counties in the Bay Area. So That is still bad. He is still bad. John Middleton, good. John Fisher, bad. Let's move on to Ugla.
Just a quick Ugla that I'm not picking. The Savannah Bananas played the Clemson Tigers last night.
I was trying to understand what that was, and I couldn't quite figure it out.
All I know is the coach of the Clemson Tigers ended up shirtless, Eric Backich. So that's Ugla.
Which is really something. If you know Eric Backich,
yeah.
That's not really on brand, but I kind of love that for him.
This is another tweet, though, for my Ugla. This is a video of a couple random individuals playing Mason Wynn, the shortstop for the Cardinals.
This is so funny.
NBA 2K online. I will also retweet this. Basically, these two guys see that Mason Wynn has like a baseball logo on his like gamer tag, and they're like, who is this idiot? Like, why? Who does he think he is? And then they Google him and they find out how much money he makes. And then Mason just starts cooking them in 2K. And it is such a great, it is, to me, this is a perfect minute of internet content. I have no notes on this. It is Ugla and a great reminder that professional athletes are out there playing video games all the time.
Very true. My Ugla is related to something that you told me during the postseason. One of our late nights, we were just staying up late working and scrolling on Baseball Reference, and you shared the shocking information that TJ McFarland led baseball in appearances in 2024. Why am I bringing this up now?
Who he played for.
All right. So that's a good place to start. TJ McFarland pitched in 79 games for the Oakland A's, now just the A's.
Ath.
In 2024, and just re-signed this week to stay with Ath wherever they be playing, where they play now. Question mark. But my Ugla about this is kind of a salute to the death of the loogie. Because when I pulled up TJ McFarland's Baseball Reference page, I saw, 79 games and only 56 innings pitched. That is impossible. Now, it feels like that should not be possible with the three batter minimum rule. And indeed, TJ McFarland this year set a new record in this three batter minimum era for the most appearances only facing one batter. You can still do this if you get out of the inning and do not return. And 20 times this season, TJ McFarland only faced one batter, which in the three batter minimum era is a new record for a single season and an incredible achievement. But really what it did was made me go back and look at how ridiculous this used to be. It made me pull up the likes of Randy Choate and Mark Sepchinski and Javier Lopez and just Jesse Orozco and just marvel at some of these seasons. Randy Choate in 2015 pitched in 71 games and threw 27 and a third innings. Okay.
Choate goat.
2015, he had 51 appearances facing just one batter, which is by far the major league record. And while I understand why this is not in our game anymore, there is a part of me that is sad that it is no longer a thing.
There is no part of me that is sad about this.
No. Maybe sad is not the right way, but like this specific archetype and the fact that TJ McFarland has somehow overcome it to still do this job in some form is really amazing. Salutes to Arthur Rhodes, to Boone Logan, to Joe Thatcher. All these guys, we miss you. We miss you. Choate goat, indeed. Jake, that's our podcast. This was a great pod. We know we've gone a little longer on these off-season pods, but we hope that people enjoy them and they have a little bit more time to enjoy them because there's not a baseball game coming up unless you're watching Lidl. Thank you all for listening. Thank you to producer Andrew Hartz. As always, we hope everyone has a wonderful weekend. You can email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. Again, thank you so much for the feedback and just some very kind messages and also some incredibly funny emails that I'm excited to utilize this winter as we move on into off-season mode. But thank you all for listening. And hopefully everybody has a safe and relaxing and okay weekend, whatever that means for you. We appreciate all the support as always, and we will be back next week with more Baseball Barbcast. Goodbye, friends.